Picture this. A recording studio somewhere far, far away.
Whitetails Experience! Thank you. Now, this week, what's been happening? Well, Zaza Gabor is on trial for attacking a policeman. Apparently, he caught her trying to escape from Hector's house. Not that bothered, and this is Punt and Dennis. And now, here is the official government response to the news that the European community is to take action against Britain over the standard of our drinking water.
You could be an H2O ship, they're going to prosecute us.
In court, the government intends to plead insanitary.
Sorry about that one.
Also this week, it looks like the Jaguar car company is going to be taken over by Ford. This should be interesting, since this will lead to some combination Ford-Jaguar models, the world's first ever range of luxury 4.2-litre sports cars with leather dice in the window and a silver-leaping Garfield on the bonnet.
However, it also became apparent that another new transport venture was in trouble this week. The Channel Tunnel has run out of money. The reaction of most people in this country is obviously... wanted the bloody thing anyway. However, obviously this is not the view of those more deeply involved. For more in-depth political analysis, our political correspondent.
The reaction at Westminster to the news of the financial difficulties for the tunnel project was varied, but the general response seems to have been, ha 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 ha. We never wanted the bloody thing anyway.
Historically, only two people have ever actually wanted the Channel Tunnel built. Mrs. Thatcher and Napoleon. This is a bit worrying, since Napoleon was a mad, power-crazed dictator with one arm. Mrs. Thatcher obviously has both arms. But the most... So a bit of satire there. The most amazing thing is how on earth we ever persuaded the French to build a tunnel with us in the first place. Let's face it, the British record on subterranean transport systems is not good.
This is the Channel Tunnel line information, sir. There is a delay to all services. Mallorys Moor, Eliar and failure to points de Calais. Juscar, Tottenham Court Road. OC, Ilniar Par de Escalator at Calais. Donc, il faut utiliser les stairs. Merci.
And of course, the French will also be treated to that timeless classic.
Attention au gap.
It's really rather difficult to see what the French are getting out of the Channel Tunnel, apart from enough chalk to stiffen McDonald's milkshakes for years to come. Let's face it, when the French go over there and buy their farmhouse in Normandy, the equivalent for the French will be to come over here and buy a semi-detached in Crawley, a town twinned with the delightful German town of Scheidstadt.
All in all, the financial problems mean that the whole project looks uncertain. But dash it all. Have tunnelling problems ever bothered the British before?
What's all this I hear about the tunnel running out of cash? This won't do at all. We've got to have Tom, Dick and Harry finished by the night of the 13th. Who's with us? Danny, Colin,
let me come with you. Let me come with you. I can see perfectly.
Sir, I've come up with an idea to dispose of all the chalk, sir. We smuggle it out through special bags inside our trousers and dump it when they're not looking.
McCallum, we've got 400 million cubic metres of chalk to get rid of.
We could wear very large trousers, sir.
It won't work, McCallum. Don't worry, though. When you get out of here, they're going to put you straight into the man from Uncle.
Right, now, before you apply for shares to help Eurotunnel get on and finish linking Britain with France, just remember a few things. Jean-Michel Jarre, Sacha Distel, Belle and Sebastian, the Aeronauts, those really crappy mopeds with the engine on the front mudguard, the fact we have to drink their water because our own's full of crap, Vanessa Paradis, long films in which nothing happens but you sit through in the hope there might be some nobbing. William the Conqueror, the Flashing Blade, and Jean-Michel Jarre. Merci.
Picture this.
And now, the Dole experience. Now, a lot of people have at some point in their lives had to undergo the appalling experience of signing on. For me, it was last Wednesday. Oh, bugger. Anyway, as time goes on, the process of signing on has been deliberately made into the most unpleasant experience a human being can undergo. Apart from standing next to a man in a public urinal who farts and then goes, oh, better out than in. Making it this unpleasant required a lot of planning in the late 60s.
Right, I've got the plans here for the Dole office. Now, if we rip up the carpet and put down some black lino, then get in 400 weight of cigarette butts and some pre-war chewing gum, and stick in some air fresheners which smell of BO, yeah, and some posters that really rub it in, like one which says, going on holiday, and then make sure that each cubicle has a meaningless letter above it so you're never quite sure if you're in the right queue.
In recent years, the government has been making it more and more difficult to claim the Dole. In the 70s, the form used to say, are you unemployed? To which the correct answer was yes. Now it reads more like a medieval witch trial.
B104/Z. Question 1. Do you or any of your dependents float when thrown into water?
The government is always massaging the jobless figures. Why massaging? One doesn't talk about the government snogging the interest rate, or tongue-sandwiching the defence budget, or going to a party, getting a bit drunk, and then having a tickling match which leads to them getting off with the trade deficit. Also, why bother to say massaging when what you actually mean is halving? One of the reasons why Dole offices are always too small and people have to queue around the block is that they are built in accordance with the government unemployment figure, i.e. 13. There are all sorts of factors that the government bring in to mutate the jobless figures. In fact, it is now more difficult to qualify as jobless than it is to get a job.
Right, come in. I understand you're interested in the position of officially recognised unemployed person.
Yeah, that's right. I've always wanted to see my name up there, among the privileged few.
Well, there's only a few places and a lot of competition. So what do you personally feel that you can add to the jobless figures?
Well, I was thinking, one?
Of course, there are many people who you may not realise are claiming the Dole. Richard Branson, for example, Michael Jackson and Nigel Lawson. And of course, there is someone else who is definitely living off the state, although most people don't realise it.
All right, here's your income support form. Now, could you just answer these questions? Title?
Her Royal Highness, Her Majesty. The.
Name?
Queen.
Her name?
Regina.
Listen, if you're going to start swearing...
Sorry.
Are you living with someone as if married?
No.
The government is eternally taking people off the jobless figures by diverting them onto schemes like Restart or Enterprise Allowance or YTS, which they then insist on advertising to the hard of understanding. And then, of course, there is the advert for the Job Club, a name specially designed so that it sounds comical when Northerners say it.
Are you coming doing the Job Club?
Sorry?
I said, are you coming to the Job Club?
About 3:30.
No, are you coming to the Job Club?
Oh, I see. Am I coming down the John Clunk? No, of course not. I've got to clear up the office. And if you're not back in 5 minutes, I'll be looking for a new British Rail announcer.
Now, lastly, of course, a lot of people fiddle the Dole. And we're right behind this. So this sketch does come complete with our own booklet called Sign On, Don't Let On.
Chapter 1. Things not to do if you want to get your gyro. 1. Show up at the Dole office carrying a ladder and wearing dungarees that say Acme Window Cleaning Company on the back. 2. Interrupt your claim interview to make an urgent business call on your Vodafone. 3. When asked, have you earned any money in the past 2 weeks, say, it depends on whether Geneva bites on this latest shipment. 4. Take a job at the Dole office.
It's a very White House experience.
This week we present a preview of the 1990 English World Cup song. Brought to you not by the squad, but by a far more famous group who recently had a smash hit in Sweden. Yes, it's the English Football Supporters.
In the good old days of national service, ringworm Al Brill Green, Billy was the idol of every football team. In his magic boots, he scored 1,000 goals. Now we've got Dr. Martin, we kick different kinds of balls. Billy's boots were made for walking over people's heads. His impression of Terry Butcher was bloody good, I said. Oh, we ate wops and dagos, but the Germans are the worst. That is why we sigil and all wear swastikas. Tattooed on my foreskin are the letters MSC. But when I see a bundle, they grow to Man City. Royal blue is the colour of my vocabulary. I got my wits out for the lads, it's great in the army. Hit my free kicks from the puncher, it's my therapy. A game of 90 halves of lager and heaps of LSD. We're bigots and we're scum, except in times of war. Then we're classed as patriots and English to the core. Billy's boots are made for rucking, it's the highlight of our lives. You can stuff your Stanley Matthews, cause we got Stanley Knight. Billy's boots, Billy's boots, Billy's, Billy's, Billy's.
Last week, the Duchess of York announced that she was expecting a happy event. The arrival of a cheque from her publishers.
Now, a lot of you probably think that writing books for children is a bit of a doddle, a bit of an easy number, but this actually isn't true. This isn't true at all. It's actually a very difficult art, and the acknowledged masters of it are people like Hans Christian Andersen and the Brothers Grimm. But in fact, a lot of what they wrote, all the sort of classic children's stories, are actually very unsuitable for children, just as unsuitable as a lot of the videos and films that we don't really like them to see. If you take a couple of examples, take The Three Bears, Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Now, we tell our children, don't go out on your own, avoid lonely places, have respect for other people's property. Now, here's a little bedtime story for you. This little girl goes out on her own into a lonely wood and sees a house. So she breaks into it. They've got three bears who live in a house, all right? Now, children today aren't stupid. They're thinking, how does an 8-foot wild ursine carnivorous quadruped arrange a mortgage? Probably the same way he puts on a pork pie hat and manages to get served his favourite lager in the pub. And not only that, but these bears, right, these huge, wild, carnivorous creatures, what do they eat? Porridge. A well-known staple diet of bears. And not only that, but they have a completely bizarre breakfast routine, because they get up in the morning, they go into the kitchen, they get out the Quaker Oats, light the stove, put it all in there with just the water and just the right amount of salt, and just as it's really nice, the porridge is ready, everyone, let's go for a walk. They might have managed the mortgage. These are pretty stupid animals. Houses obviously do feature a lot in these kind of stories. Another one which features a house is Hansel and Gretel. This time it's a house built entirely out of gingerbread, which is somewhat of a problem when they have to get the builders in.
Oh, my good God. Oh, my good God. Look, there's your trouble. Look, there's your trouble. Look there. See? Some cowboy's done that. He's only used one egg. One egg and no sultanas, look at it.
Another one, which is obviously eminently suitable for children, is Snow White, in which a young girl is driven out of a house by a pathologically jealous stepmother who is told by a talking mirror, presumably the latest new Christmas gift from Ronco, that she is no longer the fairest of them all. Young girl then promptly goes off into obligatory lonely wood and promptly shacks up with seven midgets of varying social disabilities.
Mind you, one thing's for certain, though. Snow White, living in a small woodland house with seven other occupants, she's going to be a substantial loser under poll tax.
And now, the Mark Thomas Experience.
Hello, everyone. We have had masses going on. In fact, the new adverts for Walter are now become an FU2 EEC. She's going to come out very soon. And also, water floats, and so will pattern. Face down. The main thing that I was going to talk about this week was it was obviously the Green Party conference. I love the Greens. They're just brilliant little... They're so furry and cute and lovely. They're quite sweet, though. But I mean, one of the things that they're actually putting forward is to cut the population down, which I think is quite sensible, because by the year 2000, the United Nations estimate that we'll have three times more people than we had on the planet than in 1975, which is something like 12,000 million people on the planet. And that means that like, everyone's going to be crammed up into big cities. Like, the whole world is going to be an extension of Tokyo. What it will be like, the London rush hour in the tube in your living room. Constantly. You're going to have to go and turn on the telly to watch 30-something. So by the time you've fought through all the people and back, it's not only finished, it's out on video and it's being used in a Pills Lager advert. That's okay, I'll wait for that. Food, we're going to run out of food as well, because there's not enough land to support people and give them all the food as well. So people will actually be fighting for pot noodles. There'll be more riot police out McDonald's than there were at Notting Hill Carnival. And this won't be out of kindness, it'll be desperation. So I thought, what are we going to have to do? We're going to have to, obviously, control the population boom now. Obviously, the first thing to do to stop the population getting bigger and bigger and bigger is to get the Pope to shut up. That's obviously the first thing, because he's always going around, oh, you mustn't use johnnies, they are evil. What do you know about sex? You're celibate. Like, the nearest the Pope gets to sex is French kissing the tarmac. That's all right, you can get up now, Your Holiness. Oh, hot mama. Asking the Pope about contraception is like asking King Herod how to run a creche. So birth control is the primary sort of like source where we've got to stop the population increase. Now, my favourite form of contraception is the Dutch cap. Not because it's very effective, but it's great watching it bounce around the bedroom. No, I think I've got it in this time. It's like watching a large live version of the video game Breakout. Brilliant. But I think the best form of contraception is obviously condoms, because they're... Well, I think they're great for two reasons. One, because I think men should take responsibility for contraception. And two, I think you make the mess, you clean it up. This is fair enough, because normally you've got the blokes lying there afterwards and they're sort of, oh, yeah. Woman waddling off freezing cold toilet doing the Donald Duck waltz. Oh, no, oh, God, oh, no, no. Oh, that's disgusting. Unless she can actually get on top when the bloke's about to come, in which case it's completely different, because it's like, oh! Hold on a minute, don't move a muscle, just stay where you are. There's a bit of tissue in the pocket down by the side of the bed. Hang on a minute. Oh no, that's terrible. Also, we've got, like, the coil, I think, is a stupid form of contraception, because if it's so good, why haven't they got a male equivalent? Now, we're just going to insert this short piece of copper and plastic up your knob ends. You're not. So the Greens have actually decided that what they'd like to do is to tax people for having children, which is, I think, quite nice, because all these yuppies will be having vasectomies, you know, because it's deductible from their earnings. Which is quite sweet. But I was sort of thinking, why do people want kids anyway? Because, I mean, women, when they're pregnant, you're not supposed to drink, you know, because it's going to affect your baby, you know. Well, you're giving alcohol to a minor as well, which is quite funny. The kids inside, they're going, show me the way to go. Oh, blimey, I'm here already. That's brilliant, isn't it? Oi, don't forget the kebab. And then I'm saying, it's all right for you. You don't have to throw up every morning. And also, I think it'd be nice not to have children around for a couple of decades, because you'd have all these couples, just the odd couples, who have children. They'll be walking around with their children, and all the other proper people will be walking up to them going, go on, admit it, it's a dog substitute, isn't it?
And now a quick word about my grandmother. My grandmother, Sylvia Bedeel, died in 1933 when she fell through a trapdoor and broke her neck. However, it was all over very quickly, according to the hangman. Which brings us, now that Tory backbenchers are once again clamouring for the return of the death penalty, to the penal experience.
Now, the first thing to say about the penal system and experience is that it sounds a little bit like the penis system, which is a package you can buy in Forum magazine that includes Dr. Chartum's vacuum developer, a can of Studs Stay Hard spray, and a free ticket to the Mary Whitehouse experience. However, I just want to point out we shall not be resorting to the penal penis pun again, unless we run completely out of ideas.
The Penis Reform Bill of 1830 was brought by Elizabeth Fry as a private members' bill in an attempt to bring the private members of most Englishmen into line with one she encountered on the body of Mehmet Ali, a trader from Istanbul. Hence the phrase, Fry's Turkish Delight.
Dear BBC, as someone who enjoys nothing more than a good bar of chocolate, I would like in the strongest terms to point out that after your last joke, I can no longer eat Fry's Turkish Delight without feeling that I am in some sense indulging in oral sex. Yours gratefully, Harvey Proctor.
Right, anyway, the penal system. In the old days, hanging was the punishment for almost every offence. Stealing a sheep, failing to doff your cap on St. Swithin's Day, and when wood was scarce, even for harming a tree. Although eventually this became impracticable, as you cannot design a gallows that will accommodate 60,000 dogs or all the members of the Brazilian government.
The historical image of the executioner is of a man with a large axe wearing a black mask. Now, the use of a disguise meant for a long time that people thought this man was Jeremy Beadle. In fact, it is for this reason that Charles I went to his death smiling, tapping the side of his nose and playing up to a hedge where he thought he could see a camera. And also why Lightfellow's portrait of Charles I's head in the basket shows him looking a bit pissed off.
In the present time, the majority of the country support capital punishment, but what they're unaware of is that capital punishment is a radio station.
When capital punishment was in force, if the law realised it had made a mistake, it would grant the deceased a posthumous pardon, allowing him to resume his position as a respected member of the community.
Mr. Christie? Mr. Christie? Oh, why do they have to bury these things so far down? Mr. Christie,
it seems there's been a mistake.
Yes.
Apparently Crippin did it. I'm terribly sorry. But on behalf of Her Majesty's government, I can offer you a full pardon.
Oh, whoopee! Brilliant. This is the happiest day of my life. Hold on, I'll just get changed. Is there a cash prize?
No, but we can offer you a job as a Michael Jackson lookalike.
Yeah, one of the main reasons for not bringing back capital punishment is classically that if you've made a mistake, you cannot then bring the person back. Although this was proved to be false in the case of Jimmy Savile.
Talk of crime and punishment is significant because, as already mentioned in the show, Britain is about to be prosecuted by the European Commission. Now, if Britain is found guilty, the whole country will have to go to prison. The whole country, that is, apart from Ken Dodd, who will be let off for no reason. This will mean that the prison population will overnight be doubled. People who formerly lived in Barrett homes would suffer from agoraphobia, and people from Birmingham would not have to move house.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
And now, part two of
Murder Weekend.
Now, last week we left off with the grisly murder of Claire Rayner. Police now know that this was in fact a gangland killing. Claire was mercilessly gunned down by Marge Proops and Katie Boyle, who then turned her into a delicious flan that all the family will love. Now, last week, the audience were a crap detective. OK, so this week we're going to use them differently. This week, we actually want someone from the audience to play the central character, and I think you, actually. Would you like to do that? Would you come up here, please? Big hand, please. For the central character in the story. Right, OK, what's your name, please?
Dan.
Dan. Right, okay, Dan. Now, you're going to be playing Sir Cathcart de Montmorency, okay? You're 52 years old, graying, the owner of Cathcart Grange. You're married to Lobelia, who's 51. You're retired, ex-army, interested in butterflies and vintage cars. You're also dead. Right, that's the end of your part. So, you'd just like to lie down there, please. That's wonderful. Okay.
That's absolutely great. Now, before you die, okay, just before you die, you do manage to croak out your last words, okay? So what are your last words? Now, those of you who've ever heard Radio 1 will instantly notice the problem with that. you do manage to croak out your last words. Last words are... Right, okay. So, the only clue to the murderer is... Now, the only other thing to remember is watch out for those little clues along the way. Now, at this point, we call in Hercule Poirot.
Ah, bonjour. Oh, where is her, Sir Cathcart's wife?
Hello, Mr. Poirot. I'm the completely eccentric wife and most obvious suspect since I loathe my husband wholeheartedly.
Well, obviously then, it was not you.
How do you know?
Because this is Agatha Christie and her plots are always totally predictable.
But of course. Anyway, it's time for dinner. I'll call the butler. Burnett, sound the dinner gong.
Dinner is served. The starter is quite delicious. A report coming up. The main course contains pulses, beans, and lentils. A loud report coming up. There will be dessert. And then after dinner, drinks. The port coming up.
So, Lady Budbrook, your son Gaspard has just returned from summer term at school.
School report coming up.
Oh, be quiet, Burnett.
What are your plans for the summer?
We're going away to a lovely little seaside town. What's it called?
A resort coming up.
Shut up! Anyway, Gaspard loves the beaches because they're so...
Sandy.
Look, Burnett, I've got one thing to say to you.
A retort coming up.
You're fired.
Unemployment set to rise.
Lady Birdbrook, if I may talk to your son. Oh, bonjour, little fellow. How are you enjoying the sixth form?
It's okay, apart from the brutal public school perversions in the dormitory after lights out. But anyway, now that Dad's been poisoned, I don't have to carry on my A-level in chemistry with special paper on strychnine and arsenic.
Now, that was the clue alarm there, okay? That's just to help you along. Agatha Christie actually wanted that cut out of the story. She thought it was too subtle. Okay, carry on.
Aha! Now we are getting somewhere. But who is this? It is the local vicar.
Hello! I just popped in because I heard there'd been...
a murder.
Are you really the local vicar?
Oh, yes! The Reverend...
Damien.
Tomkins. Yes, Tomkins. Pleased to see you.
Reverend Damien Tomkins. Well, obviously nothing suspicious about him. Very well. I wish to have an half-hour break in which to think, and then we will all gather in the drawing room and I will reveal the identity of the murderer.
Ah. Your report coming up after the break.
Shut up.
So, who killed the bloke from the audience? Was it Lady Birdbrook for the money? Was it her son for the inheritance? Was it the SAS for a bit of a laugh? What about the butler's secret lust for the Queen Mother? And who is the Reverend Damien Tomkins?
It was a simple case to crack. You see that rather impressive painting hanging over the fireplace? Tell me, Lady Birdbrook, what is the title of that painting? Exactly. So, Sir Cathcart's last words lead us to this painting. We turn the painting around so we can see what is written on the back.
Fat Belgian detective.
Exactement. It was me. Part of my employment training, I'm afraid. And now I have to go back to Rapido.
listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Panikudis, Mark Thomas, Skippy Owen, and Sarah Thomas. The production assistant was Barbara Keir, the sound was by Alec Hale Munro, and the producer was Bill Dare.